Well, first of all, I would like to thank organizers for, oh my God, I have to get out of the limelight, for inviting me to give a talk here. So I kind of feel that this is a cultural exchange within our department, and I came here with, without any special mission, but give you kind of impression about what different uses of normalization group in the problems in arising in the physics. So the problem I'm going to talk about is problem of radiation, or emission and absorption of radiation by systems of non-relativistic matter. So in fact, this problem started the entire quantum theory, and what we would like to understand here is the following. So I'm not assuming that everybody knows quantum field theory, and knows a corresponding part of the physics. So I will start. I will give you just more. I mean, I will define everything, and I'll try to discuss everything, but I will emphasize more impressions rather than precise formula. So for my apology to experts who already know quantum field theory. Okay, so the problem we want to address here is the following. So assume we have an atom in excited state in a vacuum, and we know that in some random time moment, the atom emits a radiation, a photon, and descends in its lowest energy state. And so we want to give a mathematical framework as well as quantitative analysis of this phenomenon. So the standard model which describes the phenomenon of the emission and absorption of radiation by matter can be described in terms of the evolution. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting that you don't see what I'm pointing here. Okay. So is described by the following evolution equations, the Schrödinger equation, where H of E is the Schrödinger operator or Hamiltonian for the system of matter and radiation, which is written up here. And it acts in the Hilbert space of the matter tensored with radiation. So I will define everything, all the terms which appear on this slide later. And our goal is to understand the dynamics described by this equation for low energies. So by energy means the spectrum of this Hamiltonian, and low energy is the spectrum which is sufficiently close to the smallest spectral point. Now let me define everything which enters into this picture. First, matter. So matter is described by the Schrödinger equation, which is written here, where H matter is a standard Schrödinger operator. It's sum of the Laplacians. P sub j is minus I times gradient in the variable x sub j. And V of x is a total potential, is a potential which includes interaction between electrons and, let's say, a nuclei, as well as between electrons themselves. It acts in the space, which I denote by H sub matter. It's usually subspace of L2 of R3N with a certain symmetry restrictions, and permutational or rotational symmetry restrictions. And psi acts the psi is a function which depends on all the coordinates and time, and its probability amplitude. So it gives you all probability distributions for the system involved. Now, the spectrum of this Hamiltonian gives you the spectrum is the simplest invariant, the simplest characteristics which describe gives you some information about dynamics, about solutions of this equation, about dynamics encoded in this equation. And the spectral analysis of this operator is a well-established fact. It's given in a theorem by Hunziker, Van Winter, and Gislin. And it tells me that there is a continuous spectrum which starts at some non-positive number sigma and going all the way to infinity. And this continuous spectrum describes a scattering state, states which disappear from every bounded region of the configuration space. So, and below or on the left of the continuous spectrum, we have so-called bound states. So this is stationary states of the form where you have well localized profile phi of x, usually exponentially decaying at infinity, times the phase factor. So the bound states are divided into the ground state, which is the bound states corresponding to the lowest again value to the ground state energy, and the excited states corresponding to the higher again values. So the matter as we know it is described by the bound states. So this table and the air in this room and so forth, while the, let's say, plasma or scattering experiments, interstellar plasma scattering experiments and other things are described by scattering states. Now, so this is as far as the particle system, as far as the matter is concerned. Now we'll describe the quantum radiation. By the way, the radiation phenomenon, absorption and emission of radiation cannot be described in purely classical terms or in mixture, say, with the quantum particles and the classical electromagnetic field. So the Maxwell equations is a Hamiltonian, it's a well-known fact, the Maxwell equations are a Hamiltonian system described by canonical variables. It's a vector potential and electric potential, which is the version-free vector fields on R3. And Hamiltonian is given by this well-known expression. This is just energy, electric energy plus magnetic energy. And you have a standard symplectic form which leads to the Maxwell equations in a vacuum. Now, to quantize Maxwell equations, we do as follows. So I just follow the standard procedures of quantum mechanics. So we associate with a phase space, with a classical phase space for the Maxwell equations of the vector potential and electromagnetic field, we associate a quantum phase space. So this is the L2 space on the Schwarz distributions on R3 with a Gaussian measure with covariance minus Laplacian minus 1 to the power 1 minus 1/2. Now, with canonical classical fields, vector potential and electric field, we associate an operators, canonical quantum fields, this operator multiplication by A of x. So you have to think about A of x here as a functional. You fix evaluation function, you fix x, and you vary A. And operator differentiation with respect to momentum operator, momentum field, operator differentiation with respect to the vector potential, and you have to add to it something in order to make it self-adjoint, because our measure is not Lebesgue measure, but Gaussian measure. And then with each function, which each observable, including Hamiltonian functional, of the classical field, we associate a quantum observable, an operator, which by substituting into the A and E corresponding operators, corresponding fields. So in other words, you can think about this as an infinite dimensional pseudo-differential calculus. You have a functional of classical fields, and you replace the classical field by quantum fields, by quantum operators. This way, you'll get so-called radiational Hamiltonian, which is written here. And the quantized Maxwell equations now become usual Schrödinger equation, where psi is a functional of the generalized vector potential and the time, and a function of time in complex function. And H radiation is, you remember this, the old expression for the Hamilton functional, classical Hamilton functional, but with operators replacing classical fields. So I also have here double dots because there's many ways to quantize, as we know, even in the standard to differential calculus, there's many ways to shade with a classical observable, with a classical symbol, a pseudo-differential operator, a quantum observable. But all these ways in a finite dimensional case lead to the finite answer. They're different answers, but they're the same. They're all finite. In the quantum field theory, the naive quantization gives you leads to infinities, right? It's the first infinities in the quantum field theory. And you have to deform it. And this deformation is called weak ordering. So this is denoted by double dot here. In the theory of Gaussian processes, it's a well-known procedure, which was discovered later, but independently, I assume. It's kind of a projection on the corresponding subspace of the original Gauss Hilbert space. Okay, so there is a simpler representation for the original Hilbert space, our state space of our system, which is written here, namely Fock representation, which we should be working with. In the Fock representation, so our original Hilbert space is isometrically isomorphic to the symmetric tensor algebra written here. So it's a symmetric product of n copies of L2, space, our original Hilbert space, one particle Hilbert space, L2 of R3, and the sum, and then we take a sum from N0 to infinity, where the zero component is just a complex plane, usual complex plane. And the vacuum vector here is the vector in the space where you have one in the zero component and zeros elsewhere. So there's no particles in the system. Now, in this representation, radiation Hamiltonian has a fairly simple form. It's just, well, I wrote here in Fourier transform. If I write this in the original space representation, then here this will be two differential operators associated with this symbol here, not smooth symbol here. So this is this multiplication by this function in the Fourier transform. So by this function, sum of the omega kj, sum from 1 to n. And omega kj is the famous dispersion relation which was written by Einstein. So energy of the photon is the length of its wave vector. And again, if I write in the original coordinates, in the spatial coordinates, with the coordinates of the photons, then here I'll have y1, yn, and here will be by kj, I have to understand minus i gradient in yj. Okay, so now I explain how to describe matter and how to describe radiation, and now I'll couple matter and radiation, and the easiest way to explain Well, it's called so-called minimal coupling. So it's exactly actually the same in the physics physicists do it in fact the same way as mathematicians, or mathematicians do the same way as physicists, but the terminology is different, and the physics terminology is somewhat more familiar here. So we have to think about A as a quantum connection on certain principal bundle, and psi is a principal bundle, and then we pass to the covariant derivative from the original P, which is minus I gradient in X. We pass the covariant derivative here, and then we replace in our Hamiltonian, in our original Hamiltonian for the particle system, for the matter, I replace all usual derivatives by covariant derivatives and add the energy of the radiation field. So if I switch off coupling between matter and radiation, if I set a coupling constant E, which is charge of electron in this framework, to zero, then here I will have my original Schrödinger operator for the particle system acting on the first factor, and here I will have a Hamiltonian for radiation acting on the second factor, on the Fock space, for example. And the coupling is realized through the covariant derivative. So to make sense of this expression, I'll have to do a so-called ultraviolet cutoff, which I will not explain here. And then evolution is given by this Hamiltonian, by Schrödinger equation with this Hamiltonian, which appears in the second or third slide at the very beginning of this talk. So that's our now problem. The problem is understand dynamics described by this equation. With this equation, where H of E is Hamiltonian, which acts on the product of Hilbert space describing particle system and the Hilbert space describing radiation, and Hamiltonian is a sum of the particle Hamiltonian and radiation and the interaction in terms of the minimal coupling, in terms of the covariant derivatives. So what do we want to know about what's the key questions we would like to ask about this evolution, about this Hamiltonian? Okay, so let's start with the simplest and most fundamental question, so which I mentioned at the very beginning of the talk. So assume that we have no coupling between matter and radiation. In other words, all the charges, we just switched off all the charges in the world, right? Then my Hamiltonian is described by H of zero, then the evolution described by H of zero. And this will be stationary states for corresponding Schrödinger equation. Namely, it's an eigenfunction, a bound state for the matter with the energy E sub j, which I described at the very beginning, times a vacuum for electromagnetic field, for quantized electromagnetic field. So in other words, what I do is I place my atom in a state, in a bound state phi sub j, in a j's bound state, into the vacuum. So that's the atom. So atom placed in a vacuum is described by this stationary state. From the point of view, if you look at the spectrum of our Hamiltonian, the spectrum looks as follows. You have branches of continuous spectrum starting at some eigenvalues. So you have eigenvalues corresponding to this bound states, and then the so-called photon excitations. The spectrum, since photon has no mass, the spectrum starts at the very eigenvalue which corresponds to this branch, so to speak, so this branch. So then the question is, what happens to these stationary states, these periodic states, well-localized periodic in time states, localized, well-localized in X, what happens to them when the charges are turned on. So I would like to show that, in fact, when the charges are turned on, then if this state corresponds to the excited state, somehow that the state becomes unstable and the atom collapses into the ground state by emitting photons. And if it's a ground state, if it corresponds to the lowest energy, then it just sits there, it just gets modified, it's stable, it gets modified, and will just stick around forever, unless something something affects it. Okay, anyways, so let me repeat again some of the key problems. So we'd like to prove stability or instability of the ground state and of excited state, lifetime and radiation energy shift or lamp shift for bound state. So lamp shift refers to the following phenomenon for which Lamb got a Nobel Prize in 1952 or 53, namely that if you measure the frequencies of radiation of atom and compare it to those which you compute, or Schrödinger computed in 1926 in his office, just using Schrödinger equation, these frequencies are different. They are shifted shifted a little bit. In fact, there is some degeneracy being split and so forth. And that this little shift, due to the what is called vacuum excitations, is referred to as a lamp shift. So it's a shift of the energy of the bound state due to the interaction with the vacuum, so to speak. Then you would like to show that you have a kind of a Huygens principle, or there's the general or special relativity in a sense is valid here too, in the sense that the photons cannot escape atom with velocity higher than the velocity of light. And finally, you would like to develop a scattering theory of photons and the particles of an electron. Okay. To do that, so I will not go here. I will mention something about here, something about this problem. But essentially, I will stick around. I will stick to these first two problems. Now, so what is the simplest characteristics? What's the simplest measure invariant which we can describe this processes? And the simplest, of course, the first candidate is the spectrum. So spectrum tells us quite a bit about evolution, spectral and spectrum characteristics. It turns out it's not sufficient, and we have to generalize the notion of the spectrum. And there is I missed some. Okay. Let me just keep, since we went on a different. So I would like to refine the notion of the spectrum. So there's three ways to look at the spectrum. You can think about the spectrum from point of view of solution of the time-dependent problem, or from solution of certain eigenvalue equations. I will look at the spectrum from the point of view of the singularities of the resultant. In other words, I will look at the resultant of Green function of our given self-adjoint operator. I'll look at the resultant for this Schrödinger operator and matrix elements of this resultant on certain set of the vectors f and g. Then the eigenvalues can be seen as poles for this matrix, for this analytic, so this function analytic outside of the spectrum, with the poles at the eigenvalues of h, and the cut along the continuous spectrum, and where a continuous spectrum branches of continuous spectrum starts, I will have some kind of I will not see them, in fact, so I will have just cuts. So in other words, spectrum as the set can be thought of as a poles. This is as far as the discrete spectrum eigenvalues are concerned, and cuts in the energy plane for the resultant. Now let me. This can be generalized as follows. So assume I am able to do an energy continuation of this resultant through the cut onto the second Riemann sheet. So in other words, instead of this energy plane, now we have some Riemann surface or piece of Riemann surface such that and then here I drew a projection of this Riemann surface, but a different projection on the energy plane. Now my cuts here, going along the real axis, they decouple. So they now go under the angle. While the poles are the same. So the poles will not change. I will have also stationary here, I will have branch points for my cuts. Cuts could go either along the real axis or under angle. In this case, each branch will have a separate cut. Besides, I can have poles which I didn't see before in the second Riemann sheet. So if I will again deform this, if I change my projection continuously in such a way that to go from this position to that, so this complex poles will disappear. They will be swept by the branches of continuous spectrum. So this poles on the second Riemann sheet, and they're called resonances. So they correspond to the resonance eigenvalues, and the corresponding residues are associated with the resonances for the system equation. And of course, you can imagine that the difference between real true bound states eigenvalues and the poles could be very it could be conditional. In other words, the under perturbation, the eigenvalue can move to the second Riemann sheet, become a pole, and vice versa, the pole can move to the real axis and becomes a bound state. Okay, so now let me describe. I am ready to describe the results. So this will give. So understanding the Riemann surface, some details of spectral behavior on the Riemann surface will be sufficient to answer the first two questions which I posed before. And I should say that the Riemann surface can be described in terms of some kind of a energy surface of the complex deformation of the original Hamiltonian. So we'll have to deal with non superjoint problem. So here are the results due to the joint work with Volker Bach and Jurek Frohlich. So the first is that the ground state of H of E is stable. In other words, H of E has a ground state for E sufficiently small, and this ground state is exponential localized in the particle coordinates. So X is a particle coordinate. So this result is, meantime, this result about 5 years old, and there are a number of the following works which remove the conditions we had on the coupling constant on the charges. One of the latest results is due to the Grismer Lieben loss, and they completely removed these charges by somewhat different technique. No, it's similar actually. One of the techniques was similar. So the second result is that the excited states of the matter are unstable under when the interaction with the radiation is switched on. In other words, the H of E has no eigenvalues near excited excited eigenvalues, non-ground state eigenvalues of the particle system. In fact, even away from them as well. So here's the ground state bifurcated here, while the excited states just disappeared. So what happened to this excited state is described in the third result. They bifurcate into the resonances. They give rise to resonances. They move to the second Riemann shape. And for example, if you look at the one at the eigenvalue which is degenerate, like in a hydrogen atom, for example, second eigenvalue is degenerate. It splits into the simple eigenvalues, and this splitting is exactly the lamp shift due to the which is not doesn't exist in if in the original particle system, but if you wish, due to the interaction of the particle system with the fluctuation of the vacuum, because we are dealing with the vacuum, so to call vacuum states of the quantum field. So this the third result is proven under additional condition that you have so-called confining potentials, and the work on the how to remove this condition is now in progress, but we are not yet there. Okay, so let me say a few words how to prove this result. So to prove this result, so randomization group is a natural tool in attacking this problem. Because if you think about, for example, if I want to understand what happens at the bottom of the spectrum, at the very low energy spectrum for our system, you think that maybe the photons with the high energy photons should not be relevant. So we should be able to somehow get rid of the high energy photons and reduce system to the one with only photons of very low energy. So here I kind of summarize in our context the main philosophy of the Riemannization group approach. So first of all, we pass from the operator we are interested in. So we want to understand the spectrum, low energy spectrum for this operator H of V, or some complex deformation of this operator. So looking at the Riemann surface near some energy in E sub naught. So first we pass from the single individual operator to a metric space, which I call W of operators, and I'll construct this metric space in a moment. Next, we construct a flow. We want to construct some kind of flow on this metric space, which on one hand eliminates inessential degrees of freedom, which we don't care about, say high energy degrees of freedom. On the other hand, it preserves some spectral properties of Hamiltonian on which it acts in some disk in the Riemann surface. Of course, there's a trade-off. So more it eliminates more degrees of freedom eliminates into the stronger microscope you have to look at. More you have to zoom on the Riemann surface or on a spectral interval, take a smaller spectral interval in which you want to understand. Okay, the third step is finding the fixed points and their stability. So understanding the structure dynamics near the fixed points, understanding stable, unstable, or central manifolds near the fixed point, and then finally relating this dynamics near the fixed points, dynamics near fixed points, to the spectral information about the Hamiltonian we are we're interested in. And then physicists say that different fixed points gives you different classified different universal okay, it gives you different physics, so to speak, physics for the system in question. In our situation, there will be only one manifold of the fixed points. Okay, I have to explain. Now let me explain all the ingredients which are introduced, all the ingredients which come into the comes into this construction. First of all, I will introduce the Banach this metric. Now, in our case, it will be Banach space of the Hamiltonians, in which H of E is a point or a curve, if depending on E or a spectral parameter, it could be a curve. And then I will come to construction of the flow and understanding dynamics of this flow. Okay, so I have to introduce some notions, which are typical, which are kind of a key essential in this business. So first is the notion of the creation operator. So creation operator is exterior multiplication in our symmetric tensor algebra. And the symmetric multiplication by delta function at point, concentrated at point K. So if I want to talk about not operator value distributions, but if I want to talk about them rigorously, I would have to, of course, integrate this against a test function. So I would have to have A star of F rather than A star of K. And then I will have tensor multiplication by symmetric by this test function. Then the annihilation operator is just adjoint to the creation operator, adjoint to creation operator, and they obey standard canonical commutation relations. So sharp here stands for either A, or A sharp is either A or A star. Now, in terms of the creation and annihilation operators, our radiation Hamiltonian is a very simple quadratic form. But notice, if I think about this as some kind of a kernel, this is a singular kernel. You have a delta function here between, say, delta is omega of k times delta of k minus k prime. Right? I have to integrate this and this separately. Right? It's somewhat a singular object. Because what's well defined is if you integrate A and or A star with respect to itself against some test function f, Schwarz test function f here. So this is somewhat a singular. So you have a two, I integrate two, I integrate here two distributions. So one has to define this object. So it's not a, it turns out to be well defined, as we know already from the previous slide, but it's not a trivial, but you have to do something. Okay, so now I want to introduce a Banach space. So the Banach space will consist of this analytic functionals of the creation and annihilation operators. So here written in the so-called weak or normal order. So so this is a sum over creation and annihilation operators, where annihilation operators stand on the right and creation on the left. So this is called normal or weak ordering, and they integrated against some kernels from with functions of k1. So all the variables here, and all the k2 and so forth, and all the variables here. So if you forget about H radiation here, H radiation, then this is a standard normal form of the operators on the Fock space. It's a weak normal form. And the systematic study of these normal forms were done first by Berezin in his book on second quantization. Now, this is not quite a standard normal form or weak form. This is a generalized weak form in the sense that the kernels here also depend on H radiation. So, as I mentioned before, this radiation Hamiltonian is itself a function of creation and annihilation operators, but it's a singular function. So to have a decent calculus, we have to have this kernel depending on the radiation Hamiltonian, and then you can define the Banach space of such Hamiltonians by requiring that these certain norms here are bounded. So this is the usual L2 norm, but with some certain weight at the origin. So I ignore here what happens at infinity, but I require certain behavior at the infrared, at the very small momenta or very large distances. So here the next slide talks about some estimates. Okay, so the moral here is the following. So this Hamiltonian looks quite frightening. So instead of a simple more or less expression I dealt with before, now we deal with infinite series expansions in creation and annihilation operators. But however, the next estimate shows that more annihilation operators we have, the smaller is corresponding operator if you go into the in the part of the phase space where the radiation Hamiltonian is less than energy rho. So in infrared each additional creation annihilation operator is good for us because it gives us a very nice decay in this estimate. Okay, so here is construction of the randomization map. So randomization map will be composition of two maps: is decimation map or Feshbach map, first one, and the second one will be rescaling map. So decimation map is built as follows: assume we have two projection operators, chi and chi bar, such that chi square plus chi bar square is equal to one. So in fact, technically it's convenient to take not to have projection operators, orthogonal projections, but some approximate projections. Because of that, I put here partition of unity chi square plus chi bar square is equal to one. Now what we want to do, we want to restrict our attention to certain subspace of our big space. We want to eliminate, for example, project out very large photon energies. This is very, in principle, this is very easy to do. I have to just I sandwich H by this projection chi. This way, I'll get operator which, if this operator acts on the full Hilbert space, this one acts now on the range of the projection chi. So this way, I projected out everything. I projected out the part of the space, all degrees of freedom, which belongs to the orthogonal complement of this range. So all these degrees of freedom are projected out. However, if we proceed this way, we distort the spectrum. We lose important spectral information about the system. So therefore, instead of this linear map, we have to modify this linear map in some nonlinear way. So I'll not explain this. In such a way that now the new map, F sub chi, has certain desired spectral properties. So on one hand, it still projects the unwanted degrees of freedom. On the other hand, these degrees of freedom, on the other hand, it preserves certain spectral characteristics of the point on which it acts. In particular, so I can reconstruct the spectrum of lambda of h in a relatively small interval from the spectrum of the image of h minus lambda, spectrum around point lambda, from the spectrum of image of h minus lambda under this map. And moreover, not only I can reconstruct the eigenvalues, let's say, in essential spectrum, and I can reconstruct their multiplicities and eigenfunctions and generalized eigenfunctions, but I can also have I have also Hilbert continuity with some, for the original resultant if I know Hilbert continuity of the resultant for the image. If you have Hilbert continuity for the image, I also have Hilbert continuity for the original operator, where theta are some appropriate weights. So now I can define a renormalization group. I'm running a bit out of time. Renormalization group flow as follows. It's composition of the this decimation map, Fassbach map, where tau is e to the scaling map. So decimation map here is defined as a Fassbach map at the point for the projection which projects on the spectral subspace for operator H radiation Hamiltonian with energy less than e to the minus tau. And scaling transformation just rescales all the momentum of the photons. Rescales the photon momentum back into the fixed ball. So what I do here on the first step, I eliminate all the degrees of freedom, which corresponds to the subspace where radiation Hamiltonian is energy of radiation Hamiltonian is greater than e to the minus tau, and then I rescale everything into the fixed ball. Now, if we look at the dynamics of this renormalization group flow phi sub tau, one can establish the following picture. There is a manifold of fixed points here. It turns out to be kind of a straight complex line. So it consists of complex number times original radiation Hamiltonian. So it's a Gaussian, what it was called Gaussian fixed points. So fixed points here are a manifold of fixed points. It's just complex number times the original Hamiltonian. Then we have a complex one-dimensional unstable manifold for this manifold of the fixed points. And complex co-dimension one stable manifold. So if you're given a Hamiltonian, some point in our space, I find a complex number E of H such that H minus E is on a stable manifold. In this case, I can apply to this our normalization group flow, which takes me to one of the fixed points on my fixed point manifold. So if I take time, not finite time, then I stop somewhere very close to this manifold, and so my image of the initial condition H minus E is very close to the some point on the fixed point manifold is W complex number times radiation Hamiltonian. Then using is a spectrality of this flow phi sub tau, I can read in spectral characteristics of H of my original Hamiltonian from the spectral characteristics of very simple quadratic, if you wish, Gaussian Hamiltonian is a free Hamiltonian of the quantum Maxwell equations, of free Hamiltonian. However, I can do it only in a very small disk on the Riemann surface. So as a result, this is, as it spectrally gives me, tells me that E is an eigenvalue of H, and H in the spectral disk is essentially the same as complex multiple of radiation Hamiltonian, which we defined at the very beginning, and which has a very simple structure. From this, we can deduce all the statements of our theorem, which I mentioned before. And similarly, one obtains other dynamical information of Fermier Hölder continuity of the resultant, which tells you a lot about long time behavior of the evolution itself. So what I described in this talk this talk was prepared for the people working in the scattering theory and things. So I'm not sure that these problems here are very relevant for this audience, but let me recapture what I have described. So I described the mathematical framework for non-relativistic quantum electrodynamics interaction of the particle matter and quantum radiation, and using Ramanujan group we can understand very well long time behavior and even infinite asymptotic behavior of the evolution due to the Schrödinger equation describing this interacting system. Thank you for your attention.